Music Respawn. I'm Kate Remington with Chris Velasco, and I'm really, really looking forward to talking with you about your music for Darksiders 3. It's great to have a chance to catch up.
Yeah, I'm really excited to be talking to you too. I was looking at our Skype history, and it's been like 10 months, I think, since I last spoke to you. So it's been a while.
Yeah, it has. And what we talked about last time was your music for The Invisible Hours. And that was such a different score from Darksiders. And was there any overlap at all with the two projects?
Oh, no, not at all. I do usually have multiple things going on at once. And I forget the timelines. It all kind of blurs together. But I know that The Invisible Hours was wrapped before I started Darksiders.
But you've been with Darksiders, with the Darksiders franchise, for quite a while, since the very first game. And so I would love to know, you know, what keeps you interested in it? What is it about this franchise that really gets you excited to write music for it?
Well, I mean, this one in particular, it was really two things. One was to get to come back and work with my friends from the first Darksiders. And the second is just the kind of world that they laid out. When I was studying music in school, I had these lofty goals of writing like concert works, like symphonies and such. And I had started sketching something out, and I wanted to do a symphony based on the seven deadly sins and have, you know, each sin be its own movement. And that never went anywhere. Gosh, I don't know how much I wrote on that. Not much at all. It was kind of, when I was in school, I was great at starting new pieces and horrible at finishing them. so that that one's kind of got left by the wayside. But then all these years later, I get the opportunity to work on a game where the main antagonists are the seven deadly sins. And in essence, I got to write my Seven Deadly Sin symphony. So that had me really excited about it.
Yeah, I bet. That's so cool. And the story, just ever so briefly, is that Fury has been chosen of all of the four horsemen to go down and take out each one of the seven deadly sins and help restore order to the universe. And it must have been so much fun to kind of give each one of these sins its own character, his or her own character. And I'd love to go through. There are some that just like really jumped out at me. And then I'd love to know, you know, what your favorites are as well. But let's start with Fury, because she's such an interesting character. I mean, she's kind of snarky and cocky and confident. And so she must have been a really fun character to kind of bring to life with music.
Yeah, when I, so her theme was the very first thing that I wrote. And per usual on everything, it, like, I was kind of thinking Fury's theme is the main theme of the game. But, you know, it took me a long time of trying out different musical avenues for her. When I was writing for her, you know, it was quite early in the development of the game. And so I didn't really see her in action. And I didn't realize that, like, kind of how, like, how snarky she was. And yeah, I had limited access to like what Fury was really going to be. So I kind of had to imagine how she was going to play out in the game. But I'm kind of glad that the music doesn't really represent any of the kind of humorous or snarky side to her. I don't feel like that would really be right for her. I wanted it to be a little more serious, a little more warlike. And, you know, there's kind of a hint of world music for her as well, and I kind of thought that would help sell kind of her. I don't know. Maybe she's like a little mysterious.
She's very nuanced, and she has, you know, like a really fully formed personality. And what's so interesting too is as she's dealing with each of the seven deadly sins, you know, they are so good at finding exactly the right thing to say to kind of make her waver a little bit in her resolve. And so I think your music, because it's not just one thing, it's like this wonderful mosaic of a lot of different sounds and personality traits that really captures it.
Yeah, thanks. And it also gave me the opportunity to work with one of my favorite musicians in the world, which is Azam Ali. and she's the singer for a band called Niaz. And my wife and I have just been in love with this band for years. And then we happened to meet her and her husband, Loga, who's also one of the instrumentalists in the band. And we met them at a party, and it was one of the rare instances where I kind of get starstruck, because we've just been listening to their music for so long. And it turns out they're super nice, very generous people. And we've kind of become friends over the last couple of years. And I knew that I wanted Azam to be the voice of Fury on this. So I texted her and said, hey, I'm working on this new project. I would love for you to be the voice of this character. It's basically, you know, this badass female warrior. Like, are you down? And you know, she was absolutely on board. So that was really fun getting to work with them.
Her voice is just spectacular. It's got so many colors in it, and it's really powerful. And yet there are moments when it has a kind of a lightness to it too, kind of like Fury. So that's really, really cool. How long did you have to write the music? Because I know with earlier Darksiders games, you had to put things together in kind of a hurry. So did you have more time to kind of just explore and experiment and play around with stuff this time?
Yeah, I was on the project for about a year, I'd say. And it started out like just experimenting with sounds and, you know, what's going to be the sound of Darksiders 3 and working on Fury's theme. And we kind of nailed that down. And then and it was like, oh, well, we're still sort of working on the game. So there's probably you shouldn't start writing anything else yet. So it was a lot of kind of hurry up and wait, and which is common on a lot of projects, especially if I get brought in pretty early. Like we'll kind of sketch out some ideas, and then it's like, well, okay, let's stay in touch, but there's not a lot for you to do right now. So we'll get down to business in a few months. And that's kind of how it was on Darksiders. I find it's very important to be able to experience as much of the game myself as I can while I'm writing. Otherwise, you're just guessing at how the story is going to unfold and how the, you know, the big combat with like the seven sins is going to be. And I wanted to make sure that, you know, the pacing was right, that the instrumentation was correct for each one. And so I really wanted to wait until the game was further along to start the majority of writing. So I probably wrote the score in maybe over like 3 months.
Actually, considering the span of the game and the amount of music you wrote, that's pretty speedy and not a lot of time. But it must help to kind of get ideas percolating when you're brought in that soon.
It does, yeah. It's nice to kind of lay that foundation down and then take some time off. And even if you're not actively working on something, your brain, your subconscious mind is still kind of thinking about it all the time. And so I was able to hit the ground running when it was time to go.
So since you worked on the first Darksiders game, and there was a huge span of time, 8 years in between the two release dates,
oh, wow.
Did that make it easier to kind of jump back in because you felt like you could almost go with a clean slate? Or did you want to revisit some of the ideas from the original Darksiders?
I wanted a clean slate for this one. And Darksiders 1 was all kind of big orchestral. And then the second game, while it definitely had orchestral moments in it, I felt like it was maybe more synthetic than the first one. And so for 3, I wanted to try to combine both of those ideas and just come up with something new for Darksiders 3. So yeah, Darksiders 3, the score has nothing to do with 1 or 2, except I did bring back War's theme from Darksiders 1, and I just give a little hint of it in one of the cinematics where we see War chained up. And that was just kind of a little nod back to the first game. But other than that, everything is completely new.
Yeah, and it must have been so much fun to have this huge orchestra, 70-piece orchestra and a great big chorus, too. I don't know what your orchestral forces were for the first one, but it must have been so much fun. Kind of like having a Ferrari to drive, I would think.
yeah, I mean, recording is that never, ever gets old. That's always kind of the best day ever when you've spent all this time toiling away in the studio by yourself and writing the score, and then to really get to collaborate, like not only with my orchestrator to get everything prepped and ready for the orchestra, but then collaborating with these, you know, 70 musicians and plus I forget how many we had in the choir and have them all performing your music live. It's a really special experience.
I can imagine. And you mentioned in an earlier interview that you used to conduct your own music, and then you found that it actually was more helpful to listen from the booth. So I'm wondering what changed, or what was, you know, the tipping point with that experience when you decided, you know what, I'm just going to hang out with the producers.
Yeah, so it's weird because I was never trained as a conductor in school. And in hindsight, I find that to be weird now that they didn't force me to take some conducting classes as a composition major. So I started out conducting. I took a few months of private lessons, and then I tried conducting some of my own scores. And it all went okay, but I never felt completely confident up on the podium. And if you don't have that confidence up there, I think that the overall performance can get a little lackluster. Like the orchestra seems to feed off of your own energy. And so that was one reason why I thought, you know, if I want the best product out there, I'm going to get somebody where this is their job. Like my job is to write the music. Let me get someone who actually conducts for a living to do that. And another reason is when you're up there, at least for me, I was like, it was so emotional hearing my music, and it was almost too close. Like I needed that glass wall as a bit of separation, because I'm out there and you're hearing the music, and I would just be overwhelmed kind of at hearing my score and not be able to give great feedback you know, it's hard to hear like, oh, were the horns in tune, and you know, in these bars, and like, oh, was the articulation correct in the strings on this bar, and that's what a great conductor is able to do, is pick these moments out, and then, you know, once they stop, say, okay, violins on a bar 13, 14, play this way, and you know, I'd kind of hear it and just be like, wow, that was awesome. So when I'm sitting in the booth now I can just focus on the musicality of it and not be like swept up too much, at least in the kind of emotional aspect of it.
That's so interesting. Well, conducting is hard. I'm doing this now because I found conducting to be too much of a challenge. So it is a really specialized skill and talent. So I can totally understand that. And as you're getting together with the conductor and the orchestra, how much, you know, prep time do you have? I mean, what sort of advanced conversations do you have with the conductor so that you don't waste time in the studio?
Well, a lot of times, if I'm recording in Los Angeles, my music prep team, one of them is also my conductor. And so she is already super familiar with my score, having done some of the orchestrations. So that's kind of a no-brainer. Like I go into a session knowing everybody is very familiar with the score already. We did Darksiders and the Czech Republic, though. And, you know, actually, same situation there. The conductor, he also orchestrated for the most part. And so he was already familiar with the score as well. So really, I flew to Czech Republic and sort of met with the conductor kind of the morning of. And it was like, you know, hi, good to see you. Okay, let's do this.
Wow. I'm so impressed with session musicians and how quickly they can just like, bam, they just get it. I mean, it's amazing.
Completely blows my mind. Yeah, I don't know how they do it. I mean, that's their job, so of course, but I'm definitely in awe of it. You know, you see all those, like, especially in a combat piece at a fast tempo, there's a lot of notes on that page sometimes, especially in the strings, and they just, you know, fly through it. Like, first take is already pretty good.
Well, speaking of a lot of fast notes and things coming at you really quickly, the way you wrote the music for Pride, who kind of appears about halfway through the series of the seven deadly sins, but she is such an interesting character, and your music has this wonderful, almost like Baroque character to it, with a lot going on. So how did you incorporate, you know, like the visual cues in the game? It's set sort of in a ruined church kind of atmosphere, and so what were the discussions like, or what was the concept art like that you saw that kind of got those wheels turning?
Well, so Pride in the game is represented as an angel, and so I already felt like I wanted to do something that felt kind of more like sacred music if possible, but it's combat, so it couldn't be this, you know, this big long sustained oratorio type thing. And actually, I wrote that piece after we already had the choir session. So, and I didn't want to use any sampled choir. So I was like, oh no, I wish I would have written this piece earlier, because choir would have been perfect for Pride. You know, there's this angel, she's in a church, like, of course you want choir. But that was not an option anymore. And we had the orchestra session coming up in just a matter of days, really, after that. So that was, I think that was the last piece I wrote before the big orchestra session. But I thought, well, what else could we do? And it's like, oh, I know, how about pipe organ? Like, I've never really used that much pipe organ before. And that definitely gives a church vibe. And as I was doing it, it just, I guess I was thinking of Bach writing, you know, his fugues and inventions and writing a new piece for church every week. And I just kind of went that Baroque route for part of it. I have not had to dust off the fugue writing since college. and I started down that path, and I was like, oh man, this is really hard. So that's why there's a smattering of some kind of fugue writing in there, because I started falling down that rabbit hole, and I was like, oh my God, this, you know, I think one thing that separates Baroque music from contemporary music is just how fast the chords change. You know, these days in a film score, you can sit on D minor for half an hour, and but you would never do that in Baroque music. It's constantly, constantly evolving. You know, changing chords, modulating to different keys, and I started doing that, and I was realizing, oh my God, this piece has to loop, and I have to get back to whatever my root key is, and if I keep modulating in this Baroque style, I don't know what kind of trick I'm going to have to pull to get back to my original key here. So I kind of wrote the kind of middle Baroque section by itself, and then went back and conformed the rest of the cue to that section just so it would all kind of match up at the end.
That's such a cool way of doing it. And at listening to it in the soundtrack, it's really seamless. So, and then you know, in the combat too, it's just one, those fast passages are just amazing. So
yeah, that was a really fun one for me to write.
Yeah, I'll bet. And each one of them, you know, they're so interesting because not only are they the characters and bosses in the game, but they're also, you know, like personality traits. So how much did you get from the developers like sketches maybe or concept art for each one of them to kind of help flesh them out with the music?
For most of them, since I was able to wait a long time till more of the game was ready, for most of the bosses, I was able to get gameplay. I wasn't for Pride, and I don't think I had it for Gluttony, but for I think most of the rest, I was able to actually see the gameplay. But I at least had concept art and then a discussion with the audio director about it before I started.
Yeah, because seeing gameplay, I would think, would be really important because of the way these bosses move, especially with Sloth. Man, that is a really disgusting boss. And, you know, the way they terraform their areas, you know, one of the developers said, yeah, you know, they hang up posters of their favorite bands and they just, you know, decorate their areas. And his area is just so slimy and awful. And I love how you put creepy, slimy sounds in the music, too. That's
Yeah, I can't even remember, like, how I did that. That was the first boss that I worked on. And I know the sound you're talking about because I love that sound so much. It just, like, yeah, I kind of, like, shudder every time I hear it because it just sounds so fat and gross and slimy and...
moist.
Yeah. But, yeah, it's... And a little of it goes a long way, too. And I like that it's just in there a couple of times because... It makes it more special, I think.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to overdo it.
No, but impact, too, if you put too much of something in there. So just a hint of it every now and then, you hear it, you're just like, ugh.
I also heard, I didn't get a close-up look at them, but I guess those egg sacs that he's got around there, if you get up close to them, they kind of have something squirming underneath them. So just the whole experience is just really disgusting.
Yeah.
There are so many just wonderful moments. And you had mentioned that one of the things you also really liked doing was just writing like the exploration music and the ambient music. And I was thinking about Submerged Realm, because that's very evocative too. But what did you enjoy about doing that? What was, you know, different about that than writing music for the bosses?
One of the enjoyable things about that is that you can just kind of take a break from so many notes. Like writing that combat music is exhausting. And I'll finish one cue and think, oh my God, I don't know if I can ever do another combat cue. That one is like, I'm done. Just put a fork in me. and then it's like, oh no, still five more bosses to do. Like you got a lot more notes to write. But the ambient stuff is just kind of just take a breather, just enjoy playing with. That becomes for me more of a like orchestral colors. I mean, it's still composition, but it's more about the colors than the notes, I feel, for me on some of the explore stuff. And just creating the right vibe for the environment. And so that Submerged Realm, you know, I don't know why female choir sort of feels underwatery. Maybe it's, you know, something about mermaids and sirens.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of stuck in our consciousness. But yeah, I see like, okay, you're swimming. Instantly, my brain goes female choir.
Wow. Maybe it's a throwback to Esther Williams films or something.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, but yeah, it's, you know, you hear that and you just know, okay, we're underwater.
I also kind of picked up on a gamelan vibe with Come Play With Us, which is another, it's a sound you don't hear very often.
Yeah, and that's actually not even gamelan. It is a bunch of different music boxes, and some of them are, you know, pitched down a couple octaves, and I just want to create this, you know, again, it's like, what's the sound of creepy children? Like, instantly, I think, music box. And this is kind of the only place in the game where they wanted something that was specifically more of a horror type score. So that's probably the creepiest cue, I would say, in the game. And yeah, it's the whole thing is mostly music boxes. I even played some melody and recorded it and then reversed it. So you've got like a reverse music box melody kind of weaving in and out through that thing, kind of providing the counterpoint to the actual melody. And then I recorded myself doing some whispers as well and then kind of reversed those as well. And so it's just a lot of, yeah, music box textures and kind of reverse vocals.
That's fascinating. And I love that beyond the orchestra, you used some really, really interesting instruments. You mentioned that that they were performed by Loga. What were some of the other instruments that he played?
Gosh, I can't even remember the names of some of them. There were instruments that I had never used before, but I would write out some ideas, and then so Loga is Azam's husband, and I would go to their house, and we would just have a full day of recording, and we'd start with Loga, and he would kind of, he's like, well, what do you want to record today? And we'd sort of grab an instrument off the wall, and it's like, oh, let's try this. Let me hear that. And he'd play some, and I'd say, okay, this would be perfect for this. And so there's a lot of different ethnic stringed instruments, both bowed and plucked on there. The one that he mostly uses and that he's famous for is, I believe he calls it a kaman, but it's also more widely known as the guitar viol. And he had an acoustic and an electric one. And it's basically just a bowed guitar, but he fretted it himself. And so it's he can play microtones with it. And it's just got this great sound. And then when we run it through some distortion and echo, it created kind of some of those really otherworldly textures.
It's an amazing sound, and that explains why I haven't heard anything like that before, because it's a custom instrument, which I think is always such a great way to give your soundtrack a unique identity, like a fingerprint, and it doesn't sound like anything else. Yeah, yeah, that's very cool. And we should also give a shout out to Laura Intravia, who was the singer on the track for Lust, and oh my God, she's got such an amazing voice.
Yeah, I met her at another recording session, and you know, and we were talking. She's like, "Oh yeah, I'm a singer," and you know, she's so slight. but then I heard a track that she sang on. I was like, "Wow, that is a big voice coming out of that small person," and so I knew that I wanted vocals for Lust, and I didn't want it to be Azam because I wanted her specifically to kind of be the voice of Fury. So I reached out to Laura and said, here's my idea. And, you know, that it's for this character Lust, and it's kind of a modern film score version of a waltz kind of meets like old industrial Nine Inch Nails sort of. And, but I need you to, besides taking the melody, I'm going to need like a lot of sighing and moaning. And are you okay doing that? And she was super excited and totally on board and just nailed it. I got back recordings from her and started doing some edits and layering things. And I was just really happy with how it turned out. And definitely blown away that she was able to nail that sound so perfectly.
Yeah, and what's so cool about it is that whoever the voice actor is who's playing Lust has a really deep really interesting voice. And because of the way you wrote the music for Laura, it almost sounds as though that character could be singing that part too. So it's just such a great dovetail with the voice actor and then with the music too.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
did you have a favorite Deadly Sin that you really just got into and like, I don't know, the one that you enjoyed writing more than others?
Lust was definitely one of my favorites. I really enjoyed writing for Wrath because that was, for me, that was the most kind of straight ahead. Like I knew how that had to sound, just big and epic and aggressive. And it was the closest thing for me that's kind of more in that sort of God of War style. And I haven't been able to do stuff like that for a while now. So that was kind of fun to just throw that style at him.
Yeah, and that band of percussion, I mean, that is wall of drums is really, really cool.
Yeah, there's a lot of percussion in that one. I figure that's the angriest instrument, just something that you can hit. And then the one that I also really enjoyed, even though it's probably the most simplistic of them all, was Gluttony. And just because that whole piece is made up of kind of polychords, you know, just two different sort of loosely related chords stacked on top of each other, like kind of throughout the whole thing. And it just creates this really unsettling vibe to me and just this kind of impending doom. And I don't know, I had a lot of fun with that one as well. And I was really happy with how the recording came out on that, especially the choir during a rehearsal for that one, that, you know, everybody's looking at their notes and it's, they could tell, they're like, oh my God, what is this? Like, it's just super atonal and this is not going to sound good. And you could kind of hear them laughing. And then they sang it the way it was supposed to be performed. And afterwards, everyone's like, oh, that was pretty cool.
That must be like the best reward when you hear from the musicians that they love playing your music. That must be such a great feeling.
It definitely is, yeah.
Do you know if there are plans for a soundtrack release?
Yes. So we are finalizing that now. And the soundtrack did come out with the special edition, but that's the only way it exists right now, other than YouTube, of course, because 2 seconds after the game comes out, the whole soundtrack was on YouTube. But yes, we are finalizing plans to do a digital release, a CD, and a vinyl for it. And I'm going to hopefully make it an extended soundtrack so that there'll be something extra in there for people that already have the special edition soundtrack. You know, there's actually a favorite, it seems, online, which is the very last piece, a big, long cinematic. It features a solo violin. I had my good friend and violinist, Nicole Garcia, play. She plays on pretty much everything of mine. But that was, I think, literally the last thing I wrote. And it was, everyone's wondering why it's not on the soundtrack. And the reason is because, you know, it takes a while to manufacture the soundtracks for these special editions. And they were already manufacturing the disc while I was still finishing up writing for the game. So it was literally impossible to put it on there. But I will definitely put it on the upcoming vinyl.
Oh, that is so cool. I can just imagine how cool the design, the visual design of the vinyl is going to be too. So that'll be just something really fun to look forward to. And
yeah, I'm hoping that we can get, you know, basically the creator of Darksiders, Joe Mad, to do some original art for the vinyl. I think that would be really neat.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Chris, it's always fun to talk with you. And this is such a great score. And wow, thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, thank you. And you know, I always love doing this with you. I love that you actually listen and play the game and know so much about the score and remind me of things that I had forgotten. So that's, thank you.
Hopefully there were no trick questions this time.